AOPA presents Never Again, true pilot stories from the world of general aviation. In this episode, a Travelair pilot encounters icing in IMC and contemplates the importance of business meetings. Find out what happens in A Rather Important Meeting by Philip H. Talbert. It was a typical overcast winter morning at Portland International Airport, Papa Delta X-ray, with ceilings running around 1,400 feet MSL and reported tops at about 7,000 feet MSL. Ground control had just rattled off our clearance to Rogue Valley International, Mike Foxtrot Romeo, in Medford, Oregon, clearing us to 10,000 feet. There had been no pilot reports of icing. The briefing called for conditions to remain overcast with ceilings running about 1,200 feet. Deteriorating conditions and possible snow were forecast for later in the day, but well after our estimated arrival time. Sure enough, our climb to 10,000 feet in my beach travel air put us well above the tops and we had no sign of ice. We broke out in beautiful, smooth, clear sky as we marveled at our magnificent view of Mount Hood rising above the clouds. My wife, Kathy, and a good friend of the family were on board. I had a rather important business meeting scheduled at Medford, after which it would be on to San Francisco. During those days, in the late 1960s, I had been logging a lot of hours in the travel air, particularly in the Pacific Northwest, where flying conditions consist of considerable IMC over mostly mountainous terrain. Accordingly, I was not only very current on making ILS approaches, but perhaps had become a bit overconfident. About 45 minutes into the flight, I decided to get a weather update from Medford. To my surprise, the Seattle Center controller said he would get it for me, and soon reported that the latest update showed overcast ceilings had gone to about 600 feet with 1 mile visibility. The revised forecast called for ceilings dropping to 300 feet with less than a mile visibility. The one thing I should have known was that in the Pacific Northwest, whenever the weather deteriorates that fast, along with revised forecasts calling for decreasing ceilings and visibility, it's a pretty good bet things will get worse much faster than forecast. Right then, I should have started thinking about getting word to my client to cancel the meeting, and just continuing on to San Francisco. We didn't have cell phones in those days, but there were other options. But I was more focused on the meeting, and I was accustomed to making approaches, even down to minimums at that time. Armed with misguided confidence, I decided to push onward. Seattle Center cleared us to start our descent at 7,000 feet. The air was quite stable in the soup, with no signs of ice, yet. Had there been some turbulence, or if we had encountered any ice during the descent, I most likely would have requested a climb back on top. At least, this was in my mindset at the time that I started down. At 6,000 feet, we still had no sign of ice. Since I was halfway down to the outer marker altitude, even if we were to pick up a little ice along the way, it shouldn't be much of a problem, since we should break out at about 500 feet. The Medford area is located down in a hole that is surrounded by mountains. The higher mountains are to the east, and the high Sierra Nevadas rise to the south. The mountains to the north, the direction we were coming from, are not as high, but the minimum en route altitude is 7,000 feet through there. At 6,000 feet, ATC cleared us for the straight-in approach to runway 14 and advised me to contact Medford Tower at the outer marker. The controller then bid me adieu, since we would soon be out of the ATC radar coverage. As we descended through 5,000 feet, we started rapidly accumulating rime ice on the leading edges of the wings. By the time we had reached 4,000 feet, just north of the outer marker, we were literally covered with ice. All I could do was watch it build, since my travel air was not equipped with de-icing boots. At the outer marker, I reported inbound on the ILS, and the controller informed me that the field was now below minimums, showing only about 100 feet, with less than a quarter mile visibility, and it was starting to snow. He asked for me to state my intentions. The ice was building so fast and thick on the wings that I knew a go-around was out of the question. With this much ice, there was no way we could have climbed back up to the minimum en route altitude of 7,000 feet. I advised the tower that I would like to exercise pilot discretion to go down and take a look, but I asked him to please turn the strobe lights on high. He said they were already as high as they would go. I realized I wouldn't be able to see the strobe lights anyway because of the heavy ice buildup on the windshield. The only visibility I had was out the side window. The props were beginning to sound like baseball bats swinging around as I heard the middle marker indicator sounding off, which meant we were probably less than 200 feet above the ground. At that point, I was desperately trying to keep the needle centered on the glide slope, while at the same time making some ever-so-gentle S-turns to try to see something out the side window. We couldn't have been more than 20 feet above the ground when I caught a brief glimpse of a blue light passing right below us. So instinctively, I chopped the power, flared, and somehow managed to blindly grease the airplane onto the runway. Once on the ground, I lowered the flaps, as I had not lowered them during the approach because of the ice, and was trying to stop the airplane without running off the asphalt. At that moment, of course, the tower called to find out where we were, as I hadn't talked to them since starting down to take a look. So, in as calm a voice as I could muster, I said we were safely on the ground and taxiing in. He asked if I had been able to see the strobe lights, and I said, oh yes, but the visibility is deteriorating so fast that I wouldn't advise anyone else trying it. I wasn't about to tell him what really had happened, or he would have most likely insisted on having a little chat. When we finally got out of the airplane, there was at least 4 inches of ice on the leading edges of the wings and a couple of inches on the hubs of the props. In fact, the whole airplane was still covered with ice. I knew we were going to be there for the night. The next day, after they cleared the snow from the runway, we departed for San Francisco in mostly clear skies. As I reflected upon the previous day's events, I not only felt very foolish, but indeed ashamed that I had allowed the perceived importance of a business meeting to cloud my flying judgment. I knew for sure that if it had been my passenger who had the important business appointment, I would not have hesitated in telling him that we could not land due to the deteriorating weather, and we would have just continued on. One caveat, however, the very fact that I had passengers on board could have been the catalyst for maintaining my composure in my effort to conceal the gravity of the situation from them. If I had been alone in the airplane, I might well have panicked. So maybe this added responsibility had forced me to never stop flying the airplane.
The Never Again Podcast is brought to you by AOPA, the Aircraft Owners and Pilots Association, and by AOPA Pilot Magazine. You can read more Never Again stories online at aopa.org/neveragain. While you're there, you can also join online discussions, check out AOPA's online flight planner, and take interactive online courses from the Air Safety Institute. All of this and more at aopa.org. The Never Again Podcast is produced by Royce Earle. Thanks for listening. Fly safely.